he's well and everything, should be by next week. He has some things to sum up the book of Genesis. All of you don't have access to Facebook, I realize, but he put a notice in there last week sometime or other that finish reading the account of Joseph if you haven't already, and keep in mind the injustices that he encountered. And this is a list of the injustices that Joseph encountered that Brian had on the notice. Hate, lies, ingratitude, and test of power. And then the other thing that he had us to look at is to keep in mind that God was with Joseph. Tell me, what was the occasion that brought about the injustice to Joseph and hate, lies, ingratitude, test of power? What was the injustice of hate that Joseph faced? What was the situation? Who was it from, and so on? His brothers? Anybody else hate him? Probably not in the sense that we're thinking of, maybe. Okay. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And possibly we could say that Potiphar's wife hated him, but yeah. What about lies? Did Joseph get any lies told about him? Potiphar's wife, we were just talking about. Okay. And the other one is ingratitude. Another one there. Who showed ingratitude toward Joseph? I'm not sure. These last two, I'm not sure what Brian had in mind, so you're going to tell me. The butler? Okay. And what was the occasion where the butler showed ingratitude? Okay. So Joseph was, where was it that Joseph told the butler to remember me? Where was Joseph? Okay, he was in prison. And the occasion was that the butler and the baker both had dreams. And Joseph interpreted them for them and said that one would hang on the gallows and the other would be put back in his place, which was the butler's. There's a guy in prison there that interpreted our dreams. Anybody else you can think of on any of these except for the last one? I'm not sure what Brian had in mind when he said injustices in relation to test of power. Okay.
Whose power were they testing? Was it God's power or was Joseph's power? Or when Joseph was put in power and in the highest man in Egypt, except for Potiphar? I don't know.
Okay, Steve? Okay. I know what you're saying there, that when his brothers came, and we're going to look at that some more today, I had trouble putting that with injustice that Joseph faced. Yeah. If he what? He had some leverage. Okay, anything else? I'm going to ask Brian what he had in mind, and we may have touched on it. I don't know. He also mentioned, and we got it up, he wrote it up over here, Lord was with him. I didn't look at other chapters, but in chapter 39, do you know how many times it says the Lord was with him? And do you know if there's other, those statements are found in other chapters? Chapter 39 is in relation to his being in Potiphar's house. In chapter 39, verse 2, verse 3, verse 21, verse 23. It said Jehovah was with him. Maybe in connection with that, if you have lesson six and I don't have any to pass out. In lesson six, it said the first section is Joseph's rise to power. And I want to look at the first sentence and ask you a question. The first sentence says, prophecy is an important element in the unfolding of God's redemptive scheme. Well, I want to look at the second sentence too. God does not merely put an interpretation upon events which have already occurred, but he foretells what will happen and then manipulates events so that it comes to pass. So the first sentence is prophecy is important, and it's an important element in the unfolding of God's redemptive scheme. God uses prophecy. So the second sentence, God doesn't merely put an interpretation on something that's already happened. He may do that, but that's not what prophecy is. He does not merely put an interpretation on events that have already occurred, but he foretells what will happen and then manipulates them so that it comes to pass. Do you like that word, manipulate? Manipulate? Orchestrate God's will. Yeah. I think Joyce and I have the same idea that to manipulate something, you're kind of sneaky about it. Is that what you think? And I didn't look it up. It may have a good connotation. It has a bad connotation to me. Yes. We had a lot of manipulation in the last 16 years. Well, I guess it's only 8, but anyway. I didn't want to quibble about it, but I did want to go into this extent. God orchestrates, was it George or somebody said, the events so that it comes to pass. How does he do that? I mean, in a good sense. Now, we're not talking about the bad connotation of manipulate. Say again. Okay. Uses. Works on people's heart. The answer to my question is yes and no, or in the sense that I don't know how he does a whole lot of it. It's God's God, and he'll do it. But then again, I do know that it says that, maybe I'll use the example of Pharaoh, that God can bring about events through the people who are in the world that have an attitude like Pharaoh. God knows Pharaoh's heart's hard, so he brings the miracles and makes it harder. Pharaoh makes his heart harder. And I had another illustration. I said that, now I can't remember. Joseph here. We're going to get into what Joseph says to his brothers and how they were afraid of when they found out who he was. So anyway, we talk about God's providence. He provides. He has providential care. I don't know how he does that a lot of times. I have faith that he does it, but I don't understand a lot of it. Cannot tell you when it happens sometimes until maybe later, and then maybe not at all. So that's what God has done here in the book of Genesis, particularly here with Joseph. And so we're going to look very briefly at these chapters. I think Brian intended it for us to finish the book today. Any other thoughts on what we've talked about so far? Gail.
So I hit home, okay? So when I hit home, it starts to drive me, well, it didn't talk to me. It didn't say turn. I kept going. It recalculated. Okay, that's God. He recalculates. He said if you get to that point, he wants you to do that. So if you're going to cheat on him, he's going to take you another way.
Yeah, I guess Maybeth brings up the thought that Esther and Mordecai would be an illustration of what Gail was talking about. I'm a little familiar with these GPS things that you go here and you turn the wrong way and you start recalculating. And so Esther and Mordecai, you all also remember that event that was Mordecai the wicked guy? No, that was Haman. Okay, so Haman thought he was going to be the man who's going to go out down the street and the people are going to say, yeah, you know, rah, 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 and the events were manipulated. And it turned out he was hung. Okay. Yes, well, I didn't go into the whole story. Go ahead. Who's noble, what you were brought to
it's,
yeah. Okay, that's a good, okay. Did everybody hear me, Beth, that Mordecai told Esther, that she was, you know, a little leery of going into the king and doing what Mordecai said to. And so he told Esther, who knows, God put you here in the kingdom at such a time as this. And so you didn't like the word character?
My character is keeping in play.
Okay.
The temporary acting.
Okay. Yeah, that hit me because I've always thought about when I hear that word, what people think it means. I don't even know how you used it now, but I know you did.
Well, I was calling people in general as in the Bible, but it was character.
The character, yeah.
Instead of saying the people.
Yeah. I know that that's one thought of the word character. To me, he was a character. Well, I didn't mean he was in a play. He was just a character. He was, you know. Mark Twain was a character. We're all characters in some sense. Ted? Jonah is an example. And sometimes that reminds me, God will use a miracle to turn a situation. Back in those days, he uses miracles today. I can't tell you when or where or how. Well, I can tell you how. It's by his power. But he doesn't do that to people today. Kramer? Right. God doesn't force this person to do this against his own. Yeah. And that's what, and I brought up for you, as Kareem pointed out, that's what I had in mind. That God used miracles there, not against Pharaoh like he did Jonah, except in this, I mean, Jonah was swallowed by the fish. Part of the what? Pretty persuasive, yes. But God used the plagues, which are miracles, and that hardened Pharaoh's hardened heart. Okay, go ahead.
Another example is Paul.
Paul, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, Paul is a really good example of one that God knew his heart. Not just on the road to Damascus, but I mean before that, he could see Paul. Here's a fellow that is committed to killing these Christians. His belief was such, and he had a good conscience in doing it. God says, "There's a man that if he learns the truth about Jesus, et cetera, he'll do the same for me in the kingdom of Christ." God knew that about Paul, or Saul, as he called then, and he knew that about Pharaoh. God knew the heart of Pharaoh and all these other examples that we've given. Kelly?
I'm sure everybody's heard this, but when I first heard it, it really stuck with me that the same sun that softens butter hardens clay.
Yeah.
So it's the quality that's being acted upon. It's like God getting all of his creation. And yet some, in rebellion, look at creation and say there is no God.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing that you're talking about there as far as creation yesterday when a hummingbird came up to our feeder. Do you ever look to see how big a hummingbird's eyes are? How does something that intricate and small happen by chance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Okay, was there anything else? That's a good word. Go ahead.
Two more people that come to mind is Abraham,
Sarah. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the one that really stuck with me. That one, I said, oh, God made him one thing, and got the other.
Yeah. They wanted to fix things up for God. Well, kind of like Jonah, but anyway, they wanted to fix things up for God and go, no, no, that's not it. Go ahead, Joe. Oh, yeah.
I think
he put himself up almost as a god himself. Oh, yeah. That's the way they thought. Oh, yeah. The Pharaohs, they were gods.
Yeah. And thought God challenged him.
Yeah. And that, by the way, a little off the maybe, but every one of the miracles, and I can't tell you, go through all, I don't mean of them, were there? 10? Okay. And one of the miracles where it gets one of the gods of the Egyptians. And the Nile River was a god so far as Egyptians were concerned, for instance. Okay. So, and Pharaoh, of course, was counted as God too. All right. Anything else? As we... look at chapter 42 through 50. We're not going to read it all. Hopefully you've read it and you've known the events for a while. Joseph has interpreted Pharaoh's dream. He's now secondhand man in Pharaoh's kingdom. And the dream that Pharaoh had, 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. Joseph interprets the dream. Pharaoh says, well, you're the man to take care of what happens here. So Joseph told him, you know, store up the grain during the years of plenty because there's going to be 7 years of famine and then we can use it. Well, up in Canaan, Jacob and his sons going to go hungry if they don't get something to eat. So in chapter 42, Joseph's brothers go to Egypt and to get grain because they had heard there's grain plenty down there. And what did Joseph accuse him of when he met them? He recognized them, by the way, right? And so he said, you guys are just spies. Oh, no, no, we're not spies. And he asked them, do you have, how's your family? Well, our fathers are doing well, and we have one brother that is not, and one that is home. Okay, so he says, well, he gave them the grain. They paid for it, sent them off. And they found the money in their sacks, right? Okay. All right. I don't want to dwell on that. He told them, you go back. This is where he told them, now when you come back again, bring your younger brother with you. And somebody of his brothers said, no. Reuben. So Joseph, who did he keep there?
Simeon.
Joseph kept Simeon there as a what would you call that? Collateral. There you go. You come back and Simeon can you can have him. So they go home with all the money in their sacks and they tell Jacob what happened. We can't go back unless we take Benjamin with us. Jacob said, no, you're not going to do that. But Judah convinces him, well, if we don't bring Benjamin back, then you can kill me. All right? Pardon me? Kill his son. Okay, kill Judah's son. Reuben's son. Okay. Chapter 43, the famine was severe in the land, and when they had eaten grain they had brought from Egypt, their father said, go again, buy us food. But Judah said to him, the man sorely warned us, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. If you will send our brother with us, we'll go down and buy food. But if you will not send him away, we'll not go down. For the man said to us, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. Israel said, why did you treat me so badly to tell the man that you were a brother? And they said, well, he asked these questions. Is your father still alive? Do you have another brother? And what we told him was, you know, answer. Well, Judah said in verse 8, to Israel, his father, send the boy with me, and we will rise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you, and also our little ones. And I will be a pledge for his safety. Who's talking? Judah. I'll be a pledge for his safety. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. If we had not delayed, we would now have returned twice. Okay? So they finally convinced him. Right? You're still wondering what Reuben had to do with it? Chapter what? Oh, okay. All right. Right.
But the curtain has fallen and time has passed.
Right.
And they finally run out of food and they don't have any
rocks. Right. Okay, so you got it right. Reuben in chapter 42, Judah in chapter 43 said some things like that. So they convinced Jacob to let him go, and Benjamin goes with them. They take the money that was put in their sack the first time, and they took more with them. And so they go to see Joseph and get grain. I don't know what the word is for the rest of this events here, but it's a tearjerker, isn't it? It is for me sometimes. Joseph came home in verse 26 of chapter 43, and Joseph came home. They brought into the house to him and the present that they had. Oh, by the way, I can't read it because I forgot to mention that Jacob sent a present back, not just the money, but he sent figs and grapes, whatever it was. And so, verse 26, 43:26, when Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present that they had with them and bowed down to him to the ground. He inquired about their welfare and said, "Is the welfare and their father's well?" Said, "Is your father well? The old man of whom you spoke, is he still alive?" They said, "Your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive." Read those thoughts there. Somebody bowed down to Joseph. What had he had said? And what do they call themselves? "Your servant, our father," and they are his servants. They prostrated themselves before him. He lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, "Is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? God be gracious to you, my son." Joseph hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brother, and he sought a place to weep. Joseph was about 17 years old when he went down. He's more than 30 now. You think you would have had to do the same thing Joseph did? Go out and weep because now he sees his brother? Then he washed his face and came out, controlling himself. He said, "Serve the food." They served the food. They ate with Joseph. But the Egyptians didn't eat. There's a big room. The Egyptians ate over here. And
Joseph.
And Joseph, right, Joseph didn't eat with them either, because it's not, it's an abomination for Egyptians to eat with others. Well, I should say the Hebrews, yes, that's right. And how did he seat them? The oldest to the youngest. That would amaze me if I'd been one of the brothers. They were in the last sentence, verse 34, and they drank and were merry with him. Benjamin had the biggest plate, right? No big thing here, but what does your footnote say? They drank and were merry with him. Any footnotes? I don't know if these guys are right who put footnotes in sometimes. This version says they drank and were intoxicated with him. I don't know if the Hebrew... Freely? Yeah. So Joseph tests his brother in chapter 44 and told the fellow to fill the men's sack, put the money back in it, and what else? Take my silver cup. It's not gold. Silver cup, and put it in Benjamin's sack. So he did. So they did. And when they stopped at the hotel at night, they found the money in their sack. Benjamin found the cup in his sack. All right. So the steward, some versions say, ran after them and said, "Why did you do this to my master?" What did we do? Stole his money, took his cup. Okay. And let's see, anything else in chapter 44? Well, Judah again talks to him, "O Lord," verse 18, "please let your servant speak word in the ear." And let's see. Back. Judah says, "If we don't take the boy back, our father will die." Mo? Right.
That caused a lot of concern. They poured their gold.
So the brother said, "If you, whoever find his cup, let him die." Mm-hmm. Oh man, that put him in a predicament when they found his cup in Benjamin's sack, didn't it?
Yes.
Okay. In the last few verses there, "If I do not bring him back to you," talking to Joseph, talking about Benjamin, "if I don't bring him back, then I shall bear the blame before my father all my life. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the boy." Let me remain as a servant to my Lord, and let the boy go back with his brothers. For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father. Okay. Any other thoughts in chapter 44? 45? Joseph couldn't control himself, right? This version says. And he told everybody to go out of the room. And he stayed and he made himself known to his brothers. Okay? And what was the scene when he made himself known to them and they came near to him? He said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here." This is verse 5 and 6. "For God sent me before you to preserve life. Well, the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 years yet in which there will be neither plowing or harvest. So God," verse 7, "sent me before you to preserve you for a remnant on the earth, to keep it alive for you many survivors. So it is not you that sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says Joseph, God has made me lord of Egypt. You shall dwell and bring him back, etc. So, let's make a long story shorter. What happens? Oh, I meant to point out, after Joseph told that, they fell upon Joseph. Joseph fell on Benjamin's neck. They cried together. Anything else important? They're all important. People outside heard the weeping in Joseph in there. So, yes, that's what I meant. He did certainly Benjamin, but all of his brothers. Okay, Mary? Right. The whole events have been fulfilling Joseph's dreams. And so Joseph sent the brothers back with wagons to bring Jacob and the whole family down to Egypt. And he sent his brothers away. Verse 24, they departed, and he said, do not quarrel on the way. Why would they have any reason to quarrel? Reuben, well, I told you not to put him in that pit. Yeah. Okay. So when the brothers got back, they went up out of Egypt, verse 25, they told to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob, and they told him, that is Jacob, Joseph's still alive, and he's ruler over all the land of Egypt, and his heart became numb. That is, Jacob's heart became numb, this version says, for he did not believe them. Why wouldn't he believe them? He couldn't feature it? I don't think I could have either, but there's other, I don't know if someone has said it. There's another reason why they wouldn't believe him, and why he wouldn't believe them. There you go. Yeah. And so when they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father revived, and Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. So Jacob, all the brothers, family, go down to Egypt, got the wagons to take them down, etc. And Jacob and Joseph are reunited, last part of chapter 46. And the family settled where in Egypt? In the land of Goshen, the best part of the land. And the rest of chapter 47 talks about how that the famine continued and people came, Egyptians came, bought the grain that had been stored. And when they ran out of money, what do they do? When they ran out of food and they're going to buy, they need more grain, what do they do? They what? They sold their livestock. They paid for what they could when they started out buying food. Then they sold their livestock. All the livestock belongs to Pharaoh now. He's got all their money. Now the livestock belongs to Pharaoh. Okay, and then the land. So if Joseph is just getting all this property on behalf of Pharaoh. So he gets all of the land. That is, Pharaoh does. All right. Chapter 48, Jacob blesses Ephraim and Manasseh. Kind of an interesting story there about he blessed the younger, like Jacob blessed Isaac blessed Jacob, who was a younger, and here Jacob blesses Ephraim, who is the younger. No big deal, but it's just an interesting thought that happens there. Ephraim and Manasseh are two of the sons of Joseph. And when they get into the land, this is way past the book of Genesis, but when they get to the land and they settle the land among all the tribes of Israel, of Jacob, sons of Jacob, Ephraim and Manasseh get a portion. But the land was divided into 12 parts. The Levites didn't get a portion. And Simeon, he just kind of was absorbed by Judah. But anyhow. Pardon me? Okay. Yeah, that's right, because Ephraim was to be dominant over Manasseh. In chapter 49, Jacob blesses his sons. That's where part of that comes in. Kind of interesting that what he says about each one of them, if you've read it. And then, let's see. Jacob dies. And what did Jacob request before he died? Okay. He says, don't, pardon me?
Are you talking about Joseph or Jacob?
I'm talking about Jacob.
Well, they did go up and marry Jacob, but Joseph is the one who gave command
concerning in verse 28 of chapter 49, all of these are the 12 tribes of Israel. That is their, this is what their father said to them as he blessed them, blessing each with a blessing suitable to him. Then he commanded them to say, I am to be gathered to my people, bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron, the Hittite. So that's Jacob's instruction.
To take him up and bury him. It was Joseph that said, take my
bones. Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
Well, that's where I thought you were talking.
Yeah, Jacob, I mean, Joseph does say later on, take my bones back. But here, Jacob says, bury me in the cave that Abraham bought. So what did they do with Jacob? They what? Yeah, that's that before they buried him. What did they do with Jacob? Did they? Oh, yeah, I think you said it, Steve. They embalmed him. Embalmed him. All right, so they took him back. And Joseph went back with them, didn't he? There's a whole entourage of people that went back with Jacob's embalmed body. And buried him there in the cave of the Hittite, which is in the field of Machpelah, east of Mamre, in the land of Canaan. That's in Hebron. That's where that cave is still today. Anyway, that's where they buried Abraham, Sarah, and Rebekah, and Leah, and later Joseph. They took Joseph's bones back. So anyway, chapter 50, Joseph fell on his father's face, wept over him, kissed him, etc. And there's one other thing before our time is gone. And I know this is a real brief overview. But go ahead, Mo. Okay, that's what I...
They tried to make peace with Joseph before they do that.
That's what I was going to bring up. Appreciate that, Mo. and Joseph tells him again, his brothers come to him and say, you know, their father's dead. This is verse 15 of chapter 50. It may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil we've done him. So they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father gave command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgressions of your brothers and their sin because we did evil to you. And now please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father. Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, how many times they fallen down before him?
That's
a, yeah. But Joseph, verse 19, said to them, "Do not fear, for I am in the place. Do not fear, for I am in the place of God." Question? I didn't read it right. "Do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant the evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear, I will provide for you and your little ones." So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. Story of Joseph. Anything you'd like to add? What? Mary. We were talking about God using, that's not a good word any more than manipulating. God was able to use the people as they are, and Joseph was the kind of man that God would be able to put in this position and be forgiving to his brothers, but also be the kind of man that went through the injustices and was kind to the baker and the butler and Pharaoh's and Potiphar's house. He was an example of a servant, et cetera, et cetera. Joseph is, in a lot of ways, a very good example to us. Okay, we're past time, so Brian, hopefully, be real good by tomorrow and be back next week. And as I said, he has some things he wants to finish up on. I was also supposed to go the Joseph, a type of Christ, that he gave out last week, but I didn't. Didn't know where we'd get to it or not, and we didn't. So there's one or two copies left of that comparing Joseph and Christ up here if you didn't get it. So that's it for today. Thank you.